have all consumed. I am in a little cafe at Borough Market with Selena Periampele.
Hello.
And hello, Selena.
Hi, Chris.
And we're celebrating the launch of her new, or even the launch, the publication of her new book,
yep.
The Island Kitchen.
Yeah.
Published by Bloomsbury.
Yes. Yeah.
I heard it was the second best-selling food book, or
it was, yeah,
on literally. Amazon.
Yeah,
it?
On Amazon UK.
Yeah,
just behind Jamie Oliver. So
okay.
I'm very happy with
all right,
that.
All right, well, you're gonna overtake him any day now. I know. I believe. I think you should anyway. Yeah. So thank you for your time.
It's all right.
Yeah. What are you doing?
At the moment.
Yeah. You're busy, aren't you?
Busy. Yeah. Busy. I mean, literally, last week was such a crazy week. So launch party, and the book launched on Thursday on the 2nd of May, and it's just been a bit of a whirlwind since then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, couldn't be a better feeling really at the moment. Yeah.
First book.
Okay. Yeah, first book. So it was a labor of love, taken a long time to get here, and feel very humble from all the feedback that people have given, and you know, people are cooking my food on social media, and you know, it's just been received really, really well, which is such a great feeling.
And the food is Mauritian.
Food is Mauritian food. So it's mainly I was born in London, but my parents are from Mauritius, from the island of Mauritius. So
Which is in the Indian Ocean.
Yes, it's in the Indian Ocean, not far from Madagascar. You know, like a really small island, and it was just my parents moved over to the UK in the 70s, and we grew up here, but we went back to Mauritius quite a lot on summer holidays and things like that. So it's just kind of like the whole book is about my heritage, my upbringing, the food that my mom and dad used to cook, and you know, my childhood. And it's not just Mauritian food, it is food from these other wonderful islands in the Indian Ocean. So we have like Seychelles, Maldives, Réunion, Rodrigue, Madagascar. So it's as much as I could fit into 80 recipes into a book.
Okay. 80 recipes.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's to give people a taster of these islands that the cuisine's not that well known, so it's just like an introduction for me. It was an introduction, and it's just I wanted to make it so accessible and easy for people to cook at home, because you know, I've got cookbooks at home, I've got hundreds, and the best ones are the ones that sit in the kitchen and have smudged pages and get used, and so I just want my book to be one of those, basically.
Okay. Well, that is great, but it's a beautiful cover, though.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's gorgeous. But how would you describe Mauritian food? It's a real mix of cultures and cuisines, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's all to do with the history of the island, basically. It was colonized by the French, the Dutch, you've got the British, so, you know, a lot of people came and went, and you know, settled on the island as well. So we had Chinese, Indian, Africans that came over, and they would work on the sugarcane fields, and you know, so it's all these people have brought all their culture, their food to the island, and you know, they were cooking this and you know, adapting it to local produce for years, and it, you know, and so that's why we have such a unique type of food there that you can find. It's just a lot of people are quite surprised, because they might go there and they might be like, oh, you know, you can find dumplings or fried noodles and something very Chinese, like on street corners. You know, you get a lot of Chinese Mauritian people who sell like dumpling soup and like Chinese cakes, and you know, they celebrate Chinese New Year over there. And so there's that corner, and then you have like a lot of very French feel to it as well, like in some of the food. So the food's quite lightly spiced with thyme and like herbs like parsley and things like that, and stews that are very light that will be eaten with rice. And then you've got the other side, you've got Indian cuisine, which is like the curries, the biryani, the pickles, the chutneys, things that people from India might recognize, you know, that those kind of spicy flavors. So it's a very, very mixed, different food over there. But it just kind of uniquely, like, all sits together really well.
But are they divided, or is there any fusion?
Oh, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, you can get, like, there's one dish that's, for example, a rugai, which is a Creole spicy tomato-based sauce. So they add, you know, can add chicken, they can add, like, freshwater prawns to it, and, you know, and it's a spicy tomato sauce, but then it has been, like, peppered with thyme leaves, which is very French. So it has that French kind of influence, but Mauritians have added their twist to it and added, like, some, you know, punchy chili to it and some coriander leaves. So it's kind of made it into, like, their own dish. And it's really, like, light. And, you know, people will have it with rice, or they might have it, put it into, like, some flatbread and wrap it up and eat it. So you get dishes like that, or you might have, like, a, duck that is cooked in cinnamon and like very aromatic spices, very French way of cooking, like slow cooking, and it's till it flakes apart, and you know they'd have that with rice. So the Mauritians, you know, everyone loves rice and over there, and or breads, like flatbreads or chapatis, so they might eat that with something like that. So it's quite like a fusion of dishes. Wonderful. And flavors.
So you grew up going over there every summer, I think, or
I've got majority of my family are still over there. Okay. Yeah, so mom and dad moved over here in the 70s and just made a life over here, and we kind of, they used to take us every summer, so you used to have like holidays that would go from 4 to 6 weeks over summer, and we would go and stay in Mauritius at my nan's house, and we, like, you know, we grow up with our cousins as well, and so many family, aunties, uncles, and it was, you know, I still have memories of like running around the backyards, and my granddad was a farmer, so he'd have like, he's got this massive like garden where he'd grow all his vegetables, and like he's always like, you know, digging in the ground and everything, and we'd have like papaya trees and grow pineapples and bananas and, you know, coconuts, and it was like, you know, you could just pluck the papayas off the tree, and
papayas like the one or
lychees. But you know, Mauritius papayas, you can have them underripe, green. They grate them into chutneys and make amazing chutneys with the papaya. Yeah, just a bit like a sweet and sour kind of, you know, you might get like a Thai kind of style salad, but they would use that to make salads, add some chilies in there with some red onion, or they would make it into some pickles. In Seychelles, they make a papaya chutney, which is amazing, and they serve it with like grilled fish. So it's it's using all these kind of like old, like these local produce and things, you know, things that grow in your back garden and stuff, like, you know, you can just maybe take a bit of bark off a cinnamon tree, or take a few leaves off a few curry leaves growing in your back garden, and just add it into your curry. It is like that. It's an experience. And still going back today, it's like, you know, I try to go every other year at the moment, but I'm constantly like surprised at what I see or learn, or, you know, something new every single time. Yeah, that adds to it. But I mean, so we kind of I go there very often, and it's still surprises me when I do go.
Well, it sounds like clearly you know your stuff. Were you a foodie from the start as a very little kid?
Because
you're self-taught, chef, right?
Yes, I am self-taught. I still like have it's so weird. It's like growing up, my mum used to say I hated eating, and it was so difficult trying to feed. She said I was a pain.
And
like, you know, it's totally not what I'm like now. But it's and I think I had very like fond memories of, actually most of my memories are like when my mum was in the kitchen cooking, and I would just be hanging behind her, and like, you know, when was that first sugar puri cooked, or that those sweet potato cakes with coconut and sugar inside, waiting for that first bite, or just like, you know, she'd be like kind of shooing me away or something, but I'm just like but those kind of things that I would remember that she would cook. And we used to have loads of parties, family parties at home, and I remember it used to be like tables full of food, all sorts of different food. So we kind of grew up around like that, and I think I don't know if it instilled something in me from such an early age. And throughout school and uni, that I didn't, you know, bat an eyelid at food or anything like that. Or I guess I didn't feel like at some point that you couldn't have a career in food. I mean, I knew I loved food, right, but you just don't think that you could make a career in it, right?
Yeah,
you just eat it. So I just kind of, you know, went through like uni, did photography, media, and then and it was so weird. At one point, I was just like working my 9-to-5 desk job in the city, and I was like, this is not me after all. I mean, I was working in travel photography, but it was just like, it just wasn't me. And I remember I started to bake cakes for people at work just to make myself feel better or like to improve some like office like morale. And everyone was like, oh my god, your cakes are so good, you should totally like do this more often. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I love food. Yeah. I mean, why, you know, but I didn't think you could do a career or anything like that in it. But there was just one point where I just quit my job. And I don't recommend doing that if you've just got a mortgage.
No one recommends that, but the best stories always involve that. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it was a risk, and I don't know where that part of my character kind of comes from, but it's just like, I was just like, took that risk and quit my job. And I remember...
When was this?
This was at least about 10 years ago.
Okay, because I've known you a number of years.
You've known me, for quite a long... for quite a long time. So,
and all that
about
time
10
you've
years.
Been working as a supper club,
self-employed.
And catering.
Yeah, self-employed. Okay. And it was hard thing to do at first. Like, you know, I had great... Like, family were really supportive. My boyfriend, now husband, was really supportive. So, I don't think I could have done that or made that decision without their help at that time. But, you know, I was just like, yeah, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to bake cakes. I'm going to sell cakes at a market stall. I'm going to, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I did that. And I remember I was at my mum and dad's house and the house would be covered in cakes because I would be, like, baking for a market stall. And I'd have, like, 10 different cakes in every single room. Yeah, and I did that for a while, market stalls, and I started to teach cake decorating classes, got trained in sugar crafting, did wedding cakes, and I did this for about 2 years. And then at one point, again, I was like, I don't know. But I was like, it felt like it come to a point where I just felt like I learned all I wanted to learn in there. But then that wasn't it. I mean, I was cooking with my mum and dad more as well, because I was obviously getting more interested in food and things. And I had this epiphany of a moment, and I was just like, hold on, where can you get Mauritian food in London? There's no way you can get Mauritian food, like really good, authentic, kind of home-cooked, kind of fresh. Nothing that's been sitting in like a cafe on the front, like underneath, you know, for hours or like a day, or like rewarmed. It's just like really good home-cooked food. And I remember just, you know, I just kind of thought, it was at the same time, I think I started up a food blog, and I was like, you know, slowly getting into food. And and I just met lots of people in the industry, like new friends, new foodies starting off at the same time. And I just invited them to my house and just said, hey, I'm going to cook you free, like a Mauritian meal. I'm going to do a trial supper club, because this was when supper clubs was just starting out. And
I was
it was
say,
really
10 years ago,
yeah, it
was
wasn't,
probably a really good time to start.
It was, it was.
Like,
I mean,
did, yeah.
I mean, there's a handful of people that I still know now today, and we all kind of started off at the same time, like so many years ago, when it was just like in your home, cooking in your kitchen, and you know, there's like 12 to 15 people, and you cook dinner for them, strangers, complete strangers. And I started it off, and I just did it. I was so nervous doing that first one, but then I got some really great feedback from everyone that I fed, and I was just like, this is great, you know, you should do more of this, just bite the bullet and just do it, like, you know. So I kind of slowly started my first one, put up tickets on like some websites and started to get, like, you know, word of mouth, and people, like, you know, locals were coming. So I'm like in Croydon, so I was like, you know, quite South London, that, like, people were just like, how do you get there, where do you get there, you know, and they'd come from quite far to try my food.
That's
so
wonderful.
It just got, like, to that point where, you know, word of mouth was spreading, and my mum was in the kitchen cooking with me at every single supper club. She was just like, I want to cook, let me come and cook. And I was like, yeah, you know, she'd come.
Is she your biggest influence?
Yeah, I think mum's like, she's just been cooking forever since, I just remember from when
out
I was little.
Out of necessity, or does she likes it too?
No, I think she was a bit of a, you know, she likes it. She was enjoying, like, hosting parties and, you know, cooking and everything back then. And I think now she doesn't cook as much, or she thinks that I cook better or more than her, so I don't get any, like, home takeaways anymore. But I'm like, no, I still want my dal and rice, I still want this and that. But she's like, no, you can cook better than me now. So it's like,
no.
So it's like, I think, I mean, from the early on, my mum kind of was the one that knew how hard it was to do those supper clubs, and she kind of stuck it out with me to do those first supper clubs. And then even some of those first pop-ups, and they were long days. It was like cooking for like 16 hours, like cooking from the morning, hosting a pop-up or supper club that night, and you wouldn't get home till midnight. So it was like 16-hour days, and bless her, she was like there. And she became known as like Mama Chu, because everyone was like, oh, you know, and, you know, wanted to ask her questions, find out her stories, say, like, you know, about all these foods and recipes and how come that we were cooking these things. And it was so nice, like, because you just get people who would go there on holiday or on honeymoon, and they'd moved to Mauritius and they hadn't been there, and they were like, oh my god, I remember what this tasted like, oh thank you, it's so good. They used to bring their Tupperware to, like, take extra home, and it had a real nice family feel to it. So those were the days. I think they were, like, really fun, and I really, like, enjoyed cooking for so many people, and just, like, you know, meeting all sorts of different types of people and sharing stories. And it really felt like this really family, island family feel. Everyone sitting in one big table together, strangers meeting them, just, like, you know, leaving as friends. So it was, I felt like I'd, you know, done my job.
So you had this epiphany.
Yeah.
I'm gonna bring my food to Londoners. When did you have the epiphany that you could do a book?
I think it was about, like, maybe 3 years ago. So I'd done supper clubs, I'd been doing pop-ups, and I'd been, like, doing teaching cookery classes, and so I've done quite a lot for, like, you know, built up a private catering company, like, so I started private catering as well with Mauritian food. So I kind of got to a point where I was just like, like, there was one thing that was missing, and this felt like it was the one thing that, like, a personal goal of mine, that I just wanted to have something to hold, to say that this is those years of that journey, like, where it had kind of come from, ended up to. And it's like, yeah, it was just a very personal, like, goal that of mine. And I think it just felt like a long time coming. A lot of people that I know now are just like, oh my god, finally. Like, you know. And I think it was
you're getting some really great feedback, aren't
you? Yeah, I mean, I am, because I just it's so, like, I mean, the book is just, it's so great, the feeling of it. It's very, like, down to earth. It's very comfort food. It's very me, which is what I wanted it to be. Okay. Like, it's nothing fancy. It's just because it's not what I'm about. It's very, like, you know, those kind of local childhood home-cooked dishes. Really simple to make. So I kind of wanted
to find ingredients?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, like, you do get a few, like, you know, you have a few ingredients like breadfruit, or there's a vegetable called shishu that are really, like, you know, everyone Mauritian would know, oh my god, yeah, breadfruit shishu, or living in Seychelles would know that. But I mean, in my head I had, like, you know, I'm a Londoner, I grew up here, and I've been cooking this food for people here, and I managed to do it, and this is, you know, still managed to do it today. So it's finding what's accessible. And so I was, you know, what you can get at the supermarkets, at local farmers markets, fishmongers. So I always added, like, alternatives or suggestions for substitutes, or if you can't find this, you can use this. So it's like, it's nothing's like stuck in the mud, kind of like, oh my god, you need to have this. Unless it's like the breadfruit chips or something like that. But
breadfruit chips, yeah, are delicious. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so it's just like, you know, and if you do manage to find like breadfruit or shishu or like, you know, in your Asian supermarket, which you can, like, you can find them. So these ingredients are, if you just travel out a little bit further to find them. But yeah, it's the majority of it is things that you can make, you know, by just going down to your supermarket and just putting together and, you know, that's what I kind of wanted to do.
And wow. So this wasn't an overnight thing. You were saying you worked on it before we started recording, about 3 years?
So 3 years ago, I wrote a proposal. So I wrote a proposal for my idea for the book. So this took, it was like writing a mini dissertation all over again. Me and my husband put it together, and I just...
Is he in the food industry at all?
He's not, no. He just loves, he loves food, but...
Yeah, it sounds like he's a real support,
He's self-employed as well, so he has his own business. So we're both on this whole entrepreneurial kind of streak, and we both bounce off each other quite a lot. That's so I think he was just like, come on, you can do it. No one else is going to do it for you. You need to do it yourself. Like, you need to make it happen. And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, I've got to stop doubting myself and just do it. Like, you know... I've got a great idea, and I just approached, sent loads of emails to agents of people that I admired in the industry, you know, went for some initial meetings, then literally connected with someone that I thought, you know, this is it, she gets my idea, you know, exactly what I want to do, and then I worked for about 6 months on another proposal to send to publishers, and that was basically my one, but in
more
depth.
And you're doing the supper clubs and catering.
I was doing
this
supper clubs, catering, raising a toddler, all that kind of, all that had a baby, all these things at the same time, and just like, it just kind of fit like it was the right time. Uh-huh. It felt like it was the right time. So, we just literally, I went and got some really nice photos of some of my food that I imagined in the book. From a friend that I had that was in photography, so I just put it together and we just made it like a really good proposal, and she went and took it out there to like publishers, and it was hard because you hear so many people, you know, so many stories about rejections, and it's not that easy to get a book deal, blah blah blah, and there was times where I was just like, oh, this is not gonna happen. Rejection after rejection was coming through, and I was just like, you know, no one likes the idea. People are, maybe it's too niche, maybe it's an area that people don't, you know. It's difficult because at that time you start to doubt yourself, thinking, oh, you know, what do I do? Like, I wanted to do this. I mean, I think if it hadn't worked out, I would have found another way somehow to make it happen. But I was just really lucky that one publisher came back and they were like, they were just like, we like this idea, let's meet. Like, you know, I had a meeting with them, and it was daunting because it was five to six people in a room, a little old me, and it was just amazing. The amazing feeling to find out the day, and I still remember that day when I got the phone call from my agent, said, "Congrats, we've got a book deal," and I was just like, "What?" And I was expecting her to ring me up and give me some more bad news, but then she was just like, oh yeah, we got the book, and I was just like, you know what? And it was just a crazy, like, surreal feeling that, oh my god, that, you know, in a couple of years' time, I'm gonna have my own book in my hand. And then since then, the journey has just been amazing, difficult, hard. The hardest thing I think I've had to do, because you're like, it's hard. You have to pour your heart and soul and more into something, and it's making sure it sounds right, it reads right, everything, you've got the right recipes, and it took ages, you know, recipes, to make all the recipes and double check them and everything, the whole process. But it was so enjoyable, like, you know, and I had such a great team at Bloomsbury and a photography food styling team that took all the photographs and styled all the recipes in the book, and it just all came together. It just felt like, you know, like those images,
no,
like your
conflict, no, of ideas,
no, not at all. Like, everyone's on the same page. It was just like really great, like, dappled lighting, to, you know, and it just made you feel the food that you were sitting under a palm tree, or you're sitting outside and you might be cooking and your windows and doors are open, and it's that kind of really nice food.
I'm there.
Food.
You got me there. I'm there.
And, like, you can just see through the photography and the start, the design of the book as well, with the maps. And I wanted to give some sort of sense to people, like, on the scale. Like, so we opened up with the book with a map there, so people can kind of see in context, where's Mauritius, where's Seychelles, where's Maldives, like, what islands these kind of cover. Because some people, a lot of people are just like, where is Mauritius? And they, you know, they might think it's in Africa or somewhere else. So it's kind of just putting it all into context. And it's just...
I once had a friend tell me she was going to the Caribbean. I go, oh, which island? And she said, Mauritius. Like, are you sure? Maybe it was a big surprise for her. I don't know. But, or maybe she never figured it out. I don't know. Fantastic. I love that. So we're recording this in early May. Book's out. Are you going out there? Obviously, you've been in interviews all day today, right?
Thank you for your time.
How are you promoting the book? Are you getting out there doing anything?
Well, yeah. I mean, I love getting out there and talking to people and cooking and stuff. So I have planned to do more food demos over the summer. So I'm doing St. Ives Food Festival this weekend on the beach. Fingers crossed for nice weather, fingers crossed. So I'm doing that on Saturday, and then I've just got lots of
this interview might come out.
And loads of other food demos in September, local in Surrey and around London. And then I'm just getting involved in lots of events and food writing, doing some more food writing, and hopefully supper clubs as well. So I've set up a supper club, try to do more cooking for people.
So you are still cooking?
Yeah. I've started some island kitchen.
You're not getting burnt out?
No, I mean, this week's been pretty crazy. But I think I know the signs now when I need to take a break. Okay, I think I've learned now, when it's just hold on, have the evening off, watch a bit of Netflix, just chill out, have a cup of tea, switch off. I think there's a point in myself when I recognize that now. And that's really important to have a good balance, because, you can easily burn out with everything. So, I'm just going to keep getting out there and keep trying to promote the islands and the cuisine and, in the book.
Well, how can people find out more?
So you can find out, on social media, I'm at Selina Periam.
Okay, you want to spell that for people?
Yeah, so it's SelinaPeriam.
Okay.
So it's Selina Periam, or I've got my website is www.selinaperiampalais.com. I'm always on social media and around, so you'll be able to on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So that's where you can find me.
And the book is The Island Kitchen by Bloomsbury, published by Bloomsbury. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you.